Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanichim Began Eden. Amen. Daf Ayin Chet. Today's daf is being studied. Na'anu Nishmat Yosef Ben Simcha Sheneftar B'Kitzud Yamin V'Shanim, dedicated by Mr. Jerry Harari and family. Today's daf is being studied. Na'anu Nishmat Hacham Baruch Rafael Ben Miriam and Avraham Ben Esther. Ruach Hashem Tanichim Began Eden. Amen. We are starting on Ayin Chet Amud Rishon. We are 7 lines from the top. And the Gemara says, Mayim kedeh lashuf bahem et akilor. So we would learn in our Mishnah that the minimum amount of water that one will be liable to a korban hatat if he carries it, let's say in the public domain, is enough water to mix with this eye ointment called the kilor. It seems there was a certain measure of water that they would use to mix with it. So that is considered shiur hashuv of water, and therefore one is going to be liable to korban hatat. So Abaye is going to give us rules regarding the shiurim of these different items. Amar Abaye Mehdi. Let's analyze. Kol milta dishchiha velo shchiha azul rabbanan batar dishchiha lekula. If let's say you have an item and it has a frequent use to it, and then it has something that is not so frequent use to it, that's something that is shachiyah and something that is not shachiyah. So the rule is, the way you decide which measurement you're going to take is, if it's shachiyah and lo shachiyah, you take the frequent usage, even if it's likula, even if it's lenient, meaning even if it's a larger measurement. Shachiyah u shachiyah. But let's say an item has 2 frequent usages, which means the shchiha and shchiha. Then which one do you take? Azul rabbanan batar de shchiha lechumra. Then you take the frequent usage that is the less shi'ur, which would be lechumra. And now the Abaye is going to give us some examples of the klal, of the rule that he just proposed. Yayin, when it comes to wine, shtiyato shchiha. Wine, people drink wine frequently, especially in the olden days. Wine was considered a very frequently a drinking beverage. Defuato lo shchiha. But using it for medicinal purposes, for example, adding it to the kilor, which is wine was a potential ingredient that you could have added to this eye ointment, but it's not shchiha. Why? Because since you have other items that you could add in its place, for example, like we learned halav isha, the milk of a lady, so therefore, not everybody's going to put wine in their kilor. So therefore, when it comes to drinking, so then yayin is going to be considered shchiha. When it comes to, let's say, using it for the kilor, wine is really not shchiha. So what's the rule that we said in the Mishnah? When you have shchiyah and lo shchiyah, so then you're going to take the shchiyah, even if it is lekula. So the Gemara says, azal rabbanan batar shtiyato. So the rabbis went after the drinking element of it, dishchiha lekula. And to the lenient side. Now, what did we say the shirut of wine is? We said a quarter of a revi'it. Now, a quarter of a revi'it is much larger than the amount that they would add to the kilor. So therefore, you saw that we took the frequent usage of it, even though it was the kula, meaning the larger measure. Now, we give another example. Halav, when it came to milk. Achilato shchiha. Okay, obviously the drinking of milk is prevalent. However, refuato lo shchiha. Using it again for refua is not so shchiha. Again, you can add it to the kilor, but since you can add water for that matter to kilor, so therefore there's other items, so that doesn't make milk so frequently used for the medicinal side. So again, you have a case of shchiha and no shchiha. What was the shiur that we gave? When it came to milk, we said the shiur of a swallow, which is a gulp, so to speak. Kedeh gimi'ah. Now, kedeh gimi'ah is obviously larger than the amount of milk you'd put in the kilor mixture. So therefore, again, you saw the rule of shchicha and lo shchicha. You took shchicha lekula. The Gemara says azul rabbanan batar achilato lekula. Now we give another manifestation of the rule of Abaye. Dvash, when it comes to honey, achilato shchicha. Obviously, people eat honey, so its eating is considered prevalent. Refuato shchicha, and for that matter, for medicinal purposes, it's also shchicha. Meaning, the only way to cure that abrasion on the backs of the animals that the Gemara called katit is by using honey. So therefore, the Gemara calls devash shchiyah. So now we have to understand, you have shchiha and shchiha. Now you may ask a question just before we go further. What is more prevalent? Is it more prevalent to eat dvash, or is it more prevalent to put it on the back of animals? Now obviously you would say, people obviously eat honey more times than you put it on the back of an animal in order to heal it. But that's not the way we're judging shchicha. Which means we're not judging it by times, which means you drink it more times than using it for the 4 hours. We're judging it, so to speak, in categories, which means devash can be used for two different things. It can be used for eating, and it can be used for refuah. In the eating category, devash is shchicha. People eat devash. It's a normal food to eat. When it comes to the medicinal category, dvash is also shchicha. It's the only ointment that you use for katit. Now, what was the rule of Abaye? When you have shchicha and shchicha, so the Gemara says, azul batar refuato lechumra. So then you take the more stringent shi'ud, which means if you would have taken the shi'ud of achila, it would have been the size of a gerogeret. As we learned, all the shi'udim of food on Shabbat is the size of a fig. However, we chose the shi'ud of the amount that it takes to put on the sore of the animal. Now, once Abaye gave us the cases that are clearly understood, he's going to bring a question. Elamayim, when it comes to water, mechdi. Let's analyze. Shtiyato shkiha. Obviously, drinking of water, as much as people drink wine, but water obviously is a staple drink. Refuato lo shkiha. Now, using it for the kilor, mixing it in the kilor, is not so prevalent. Again, since you have other options, you had some people put wine in the kilor, you have other people who put, you know, milk in the kilor in order to make the eye ointment viable. So therefore, what should the rule be? In the shchicha, in the lo shchicha, you should take the shchicha lekula. Therefore, the shi'ur of water should be, a revi'it of water. However, we didn't say that. We said that the shi'ur of water is the small amount that's added to the kilor. So that goes against Abaye's rule. Again, you have a shchicha, drinking, lo shchicha, adding it to the ointment, and the Gemara chose the lo shchicha. So Gemara says, what's the reason why the rabbis went after the refuah lechumra? So comes the Gemara and says, Amar Abaye begilila shanu. First answer, we're talking about the people of the Galil. As she writes, Shehen Aniyin, they were poor people. Umakpidim bedavar muat, they are careful even on small items. Vehasin al yain vehalav, they were, they were miserly when it came to even using a little wine or a little milk to stick in the kilor. So what would they use? They would use water. So therefore, for the guys in the Galil, exactly, water for them is shchiya when it comes to kilog. That's the only item they would use. So therefore you have shchiha and shchiha. What's the rule of Abaye? Shchiha. So you take the shchiha lekula. So the Amishnah was specifically said for the Galil people. Comes the Gemara and says, Rava amar afilu tima bishar mikomot. We can even say that the Mishnah is not limited to the Galil. It can even be referring to other places. Kedish Shmuel, following Shmuel's ruling, the Amar Shmuel, kol shakyane masu umetalele. All beverages that you stick into the eye ointment, the kilor, masu, they will heal. ומתללה, but מתללה, they crust up and they end up forming like a cover over the eye, and then the person is not going to really be able to see until he wipes it off. לבר ממאיה, except when you mix the kilor with water, demasu. Not only does it heal, ולא מתללה, it doesn't crust up on the eye. Seems the water absorbs into the kilor well, or either dries up, and therefore doesn't cause a film on the side of the eye that will impair his vision. So therefore, according to Shmuel, it's logical if a person is going to make the kilor, he's going to use water, because it has both advantages. It cures and it doesn't crust up and cause a film. So therefore, according to that, it's shchicha and shchicha. Both usages are prevalent, so therefore the Mishnah gave the din of the shchicha, one in medicinal, which in that case is lechumra, because the rule is when you have shchicha and shchicha, you take the shchicha lechumra. Comes the Gemara, continues with Shahar, kol ha-mashkin bar bi'id. The Mishnah said that all the other beverages, the din is a rivi'it, which means we put dvash, we gave a certain shiur, halav, we gave a certain shiur, yayin, we gave a certain shiur, less than a rivi'it. But the Mishnah then said, but when it comes to all other beverages, the minimal shiur that's going to be hayav on Shabbat is a rivi'it. Tanu rabbanan, we have a braita, dam, when it comes to blood, v'chol minei mashkim, and all other beverages as well, bar bi'it, the shiur is going to be minimally a rivi'it. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, dam, he says, well, specifically when it comes to blood, kedei lichol be'ayin achat, the amount of blood that would take to dress one eye. Lichol would literally mean like to paint one eye. Why would anybody use blood to paint an eye? Sheken kohalin lebarkit. If somebody has, let's say, swelling of the eye, it seems one of the cures were that they would take some blood and they would place it on the swelling. That's barkit. Umayninu, and what type of blood would they put on such a swelling? Dama de tarnegolet bara, the blood of a wild hen. So therefore, what Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar is saying, he says, I agree that when it comes to all beverages, it's a nevi'it. However, when it comes to this specific blood of the dam of a tarnegolet bara, then already the shiur is going to be less. Why? Because it did have a usage in order to heal a person with a swelled eye. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, dam kedei lechol bo ayin achat. He says something similar, that also blood is also the shiur to paint one eye. Sheken kohalim le'irud. Because if a person has the irud, as she explains, that's cataracts, where he has, let's say, white spots in his eyes, that's the way that she explains it. Umayniu, and which blood would you use in order to cure the cataract? Dama de karostina, the blood of an atalef, as she calls it. Shekorin talfa, that would be a mole, the blood of a mole. So therefore, he also says that there's certain blood that the shiur will be even less. So now the Gemara wants to give us a siman to remember who said what. V'simanach, gava legava, bara lebara. Which means the cataracts which are in the eye, that's gava. So you use a type of blood from a bird that is domesticated, that is in the town. However, bara, when it comes to the protrusion of the eye, so therefore you use the blood of a bara, of an undomesticated animal that's found outside the city in the fields. So therefore, gava legava. You know, domesticate something that's inside the town, use it for something inside the eye. Something outside the town, which means the technical bara, used for a type of swelling which is outside the eye. It's just to remember which is what. But the Gemara continues. This is actually the Braita talking now. When with all these shiuri mentioned, bimotzi. This is talking about the fellow that carries these things out on Shabbat. Aval bimatsniya. However, when it comes to the matzniya, which means that's the guy that stores items, kol shehu hayav. So according to Tanakam, as we learned earlier, that a matzniya, these shiurim were not said for the matzniya, which means if a guy, let's say, stores less than the prescribed measures of the Mishnah, that means to him it's considered hashuv, even less a measure. So therefore we said the matzniya himself will be hayav even on the less measure. So remember, that's the way we learned the Mishnah in the previous perek, the seventh perek. That's the way we learned the first Mishnah in the eighth perek, that all those shiurim were said for a regular guy that's carrying out. That's for the majority. However, if a matzniyah takes less than that, which means he shows credence to it and importance to it, it'll be hayav even less. So it says, Rabbi Shimon omer b'med devarim amurim b'matzniyah. Now, Rabbi Shimon came along and said, no, all the minimum measurements in the Mishnah are actually talking about a matzniyah. As we learned yesterday, Rabbi Shimon argued on Tanakama. He said that even a matzniyah has a minimum. And the minimum for a matzniyah is the minimum shiurim that the Mishnah discussed. However, which means, let's say a matzniyah would take a kolshu, a drop of one of these items, even the matzniyah would not be hayav. Which means Rabbi Shimon says, to be hayav, even if a guy is storing these items, the Mishnah gave you the minimum items for a matzniyah. Aval b'motzi, enu hayav ela b'rbi'it. But for everybody else, which means who's carrying stuff out, then the shiur is a rivi'it, which means when it comes to other items, it can be less than a rivi'it, only for a matzniyah, but that's the shiur that was said in the Mishnah. But for everybody else, it's rivi'it. Umodim hakamim l'Rabbi Shimon, and hakamim agreed to Rabbi Shimon, b'motzi shofchim l'reshut rabim, that if a person takes that dirty water into the reshut rabim, shishi'uran b'rivi'it, that that shiur is a rivi'it, which means when it comes to all the other items, the Hachamim gave different shiurim. However, they agree that to be motzhayav on shofkin, the dirty waters, even the rabbis will tell you that the minimum shiur to be hayav is a rivi'it. Whereas they gave less shiurim for other things, when it comes to shofkin, Hachamim will tell you, we agree it's got to be a rivi'it. Let's just read the Rashi together inside. Let's read the Rashi b'motzi shofkim. Two lines down from the wide. B'motzi shofkim adam shelo etzni'an. Right? Let's say a person that was not matzniya shofkim. Because according to the Hakamim, if a guy was matzniya, then there's no shiur. Any shiur is going to be hayav. But let's say a guy was not matzniya. Enu hayav ela b'rbi'it. They're going to agree that the shiur is a b'rbi'it. Which means, let's say for example, according to Tanakama, take dvash, right? They held dvash for a regular guy is the shiur to place on the back of the animal, right? That's for a regular guy. For a matznia, it could be even less. When it comes to halav, for a regular guy, it's the amount to swallow. For a matznia, it could even be less. Right? So the shiurim in the Mishnah, according to Achamim, those small shiurim was said regarding who? A regular guy that's taking things out. But a matzniyah can even be less than those prescribed measures. But Achamim agree when it comes to shofchin, when it comes to this dirty water, that even the minimum shiur for everybody else is going to be a rivi'i. So they up the amount to be hayab on shofchin. The Gemara will explain what exactly people use dirty water for. In any event, the Gemara goes and says, Amar Mor, we're going to now take a previously stated statement from the Braita that we just learned, and we're going to analyze it. Right? We said, when were the shiurim in the Mishnah talking about by a guy, regular guy that takes these things out, so the Mishnah gave the minimal shiur? Aval b'matzniyah. But the guy that stores the items, kol shehu. So then already he'll be hayab even on a kolshu, even on less than the minimal measurement of the Mishnah, and anything. So the Gemara asks, Atu matzniya lav motzihu? Means the Gemara over here has a question in the language of the Braita. You're telling me that there's a difference between a motzi and a matzniya. The motzi is the guy that takes something out. So he's got the regular shiurim that the Mishnah said. But a matzniya is hayab even on less. Now, you're not hayav for being matzniya. You're hayav for being matzniya and then motzi. So therefore the Gemara is eskan de lashon of the Braita, which means the Gemara's lashon is atu matzniya lav motziu. What? When you said matzniya, he's not a motzi? So the bright lashon for the Braita should have been aval matzniya umotzi koshu. Why did the Braita leave out that word? You're not hayav just for being matzniya. So the Gemara says, really the Braita was saying a chidush. The Gemara actually was going according to an opinion that we're familiar with from the previous perek. And that's the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. If you remember, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar's opinion was that once a guy is matzniyah something, and somebody goes, let's say, and takes out that item, so the fellow that takes out the item, even though to him, let's say, it's not hashuv, but the machshava of the matzniyah of, you know, giving credence to that item could mechayev the guy, someone else, that took it out. So therefore, Abaye is going to explain those, that braita in that vein. And he says, Amar Abaye, Hacha b'may askinan, what are we talking about over here? B'talmid, what about a student? Actually, let's learn it like that. She says, you have a young apprenticeship, where a student is studying to be in a professional, let's say he's working for a carpenter, right? So they call it talmid lefnei rabbo. You know, an apprentice in front of his teacher, his master. Betamid shamalo rabbo, right? His master told him, lech ufana li hamakom le'seuda. Go clear up the place over there so we can have a seuda. Have a meal. Halak ufana lo davar chashuv lakol. Then he went and he was in the public domain, so he started moving things. So let's say he moved an item that is important to everybody, where everybody gives hashivut to it, and let's say he carried it for Amod. So hayav alavir. Okay, for sure he's going to be hayav. If he did it b'shogeg, he'll be hayav korban chatat. Davar she'enu hashuv lakol. But let's say he picked up an item, let's say to most people, it's really not considered important. I atzne'e rabeh, but his master stores such items. Mehayev alavir. So then the student is going to be hayav because the master is matzniyah. But if the master does not store it, so he's not going to be hayav. So you see over here what? When the braita said, it's talking about a case where the matzniyah was not motzi. The matzniyah was just matzniyah and somebody else was motzi. And the hiddush of the braita is that you're going to be hayav on the fact that somebody else is matzniyah a item like that. Now, whose opinion is that? Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. That we don't do it. So the braita is really not going according to the shita of the hachamim. The braita is going according to that opinion. Comes the Gemara further and says, Shofchin. So we said everybody agrees when it comes to Shofchin, to these dirty waters. Everybody holds what? That the shi'ud of it is a revi'it. So the Gemara says, Shofkin l'may hazu. Well, what's the function of Shofkin? What do you use it for? That they give me a shi'ud. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah legabel bahen etatit. Yeah, you use dirty waters in order to make cement. Which means that you don't have to necessarily use clean water. You just need to have a mixture. So therefore, in the head mixture of cement, you will use a revi'it, let's say, of shofkin. So the Gemara says, but didn't we learn the braita? Tid kedei la'asot behem pikur. We said, what's the amount of tit? Tar, let's say, if a person carries on Shabbat, what's the minimum measurement to be hayab? So the shi'ud is kedei la'asot behem pikur. Now what is pikur? So that she explains that, let's say you have a certain a mechanism where there's a fire, let's say, in it. It's like a furnace. So what they would do is they would bore a hole in the side of the furnace where they could put the tip of the bellows into the hole. And what would they do? Then they would, you know, squeeze the bellows in order to get some air in there in order to get the fire to roar. So you need to make a little hole. Now that little hole, they would cushion it with some tar on the side of it. So when you can stick the hole of the bellow in there, it rests nicely in the hole. So that's called pikur. You know, the mouth of the kur. Kur is that apparatus that has the fire. So now, the Gemara is asking a question. The minimum amount of tar that you can carry on Shabbat to be hayav is that small little amount of pikur, which is really, really minimum. So how come you're telling me now, when it comes to shofkim, when it comes to taking shofkim, you're telling me the amount that it will take in order to megabel teeth, in order to make, let's say, tar. It seems that that is a bigger shi'ur, which means the Gemara over here is asking a question like this. Let's read it inside. מודים אחר רבי שמעון במוציא שוק שלם ששורם ברבית שופכין למי חזי אמר רבי ירמיה לגבל במטתית ועד תניה תית כדי לעשות בהם פיקור, which sounds like the amount of teat is really minimal, so therefore in that minimal amount of teat you do not need a revi'it of water to make that small amount. So therefore the water should be in correlation to the amount of teat that's hashuv. So therefore it can be much less than a revi'it. So the Gemara says, Lakasha, ha de megabel, ha de lo megabel. It depends. If you're talking about tar that already was made already, then the minimum shiur is going to be hayav to carry on Shabbat, that small amount to put in the pikur. However, if it wasn't made already, and now you're planning on making it, then the shiur of the water is going to be a nevi'it. Why? Lefi she'en adam toreach legaber tit la'asot pikur. A guy's not going to toil himself to make a small amount of teat in order to fill up the pikur, which means you don't make teat in such small measures. Means you make it in a nice size. So then what's the shiur of making teat? The shiur would be where you use at least a revi'it of water. Once you have it made already, then carrying teat on Shabbat, then it'll be even a small shiur, the amount of, you know, to place in the pikur. So we're talking about it at different stages. To make the teat, which means kodem gibul, before you actually put them together, then a guy's not making a small amount. He's going to make a substantial amount. Therefore, the shofkin has to be paramount to that shiur. Therefore, exactly to what he needs. But he's definitely not making a whole batch of tar, a small batch of tar, you know, just for pikur. So therefore, we're talking about kodem gibul and achar gibul. Comes the Mishnah. Hamotzi heaven. Now we discuss different items that a person is going to be hayav on the shiur if he carries it on Shabbat. Heaven literally means a rope. Kedeh la'asot ozen nekupa. In order to make an ozen, ozen literally a handle. Literally means an ear, but uses a handle for a kupa, for a basket. Yeah, they would fashion the rope like a handle to carry the basket. Gemi is a reed. Kedeh la'asot telai l'napav l'kabra. In order to make a hook, in order to hang the napav l'kabra, those are the utensils that are used for sifting. They would put like a little reed around it and use to hang it up against the wall. Rabbi Yehuda omer, kedeh litol mimenu midat mena'al l'katan. He says, no, the reed is the size that would be used to show a shoemaker the size of the shoe of a katan. Because a guy wants to have shoes made up, so he wants to tell the shoemaker, you know, how what's the size of the shoe? So he bring a reed and say, this big. So that's the shiur. They can use it as a measure to the size of a shoe of a katan. Niyar, when it comes to paper, what's the minimal size of paper? Kete lichtov alab kesher mochsin. In order that the tax collector can write on it a receipt. Now, what are these tax collectors writing receipts? So that she explains two lines on the bottom. Yesh lecha adam shenotena meches losh hanahar. A certain guy that would pay the tax collector that used to stand by the river. Bimkom ehad. O mohelo bimatana. Or sometimes I say the tax collector would even say, you know, he forgives you. You don't have to pay it at all. But bottom line, you need a receipt to know that you paid it. V'hu moser lo chotam. So he gives him a receipt. Le'arot le'moches shemahalo ha'mechaz. Which means the guy has to show the tax collector that he paid in full, because otherwise he's going to charge him twice. So this is v'darko lichtov bo shtei otiyot. So the tax collector that he paid would, let's say, write on the paper two letters that she says, "V'hen gedolot mishtei otiyot shelaru." They're two big letters. He'd write it on a piece of paper, and the guy would, you know, carry it with him and show it. Any time tax collector says, "Hey, did you pay your taxes?" He takes it out, puts it on, you know, shows it to them. So the shiur of niyan, that's hashuv, is the amount to write two big letters that was normally written, let's say, by the tax collector to show that he paid. Now the Mishnah says, "V'motzi kesher mochsim hayav." So if a person carries out the receipt of the tax collector, hayav. Now seemingly this is redundant. Well, we just said that the shirt of niyar is the amount, the size of a kesher mochsim. Now you tell me if a guy carries the kesher mochsim, he's hayav. Well, isn't that obvious? So the Tosafot on the Amud Bet the third Tosfot. It's tarich lashmi'ina. The Mishnah needs to tell us that case. Afilu katav ala klaf. Even if, let's say, they wrote the shtar moksin on parchment, which means we're going to learn in a second that parchment has a different shiur, because normally you don't write on parchment. Parchment usually write, let's say, ketve kodesh on it, no holy thing. So the Mishnah is going to say that the minimal shiur of parchment to be hayav is the amount to write parashat Shema, meaning Shema and Vaftah, which is obviously bigger than writing two letters. Well, the Mishnah is coming to tell you, however, if they took a parchment and they used it to write this Shtar Moksin on it, so therefore it's going to be Hayav even on a less Shi'ul, because bottom line now, you're using it for the Shtar Moksin, then therefore it becomes Hashuv to you, and therefore it's going to be Hayav. So the Hidush is, sometimes Klaf can be Hayav even on a less Shi'ul. That's what the Tosfot says. And we continue, the Mishnah goes on. We turn to Amud Bet. Niyar Mahuk, if you have, let's say, paper that was erased. Okay, so now really, once the paper was erased, it really wasn't usable to rewrite on those papers. So then what's the considered shiur hashuv? Kedel lichroch al seluchit ketana shel plaiton. You know, enough, big enough in order to wrap around that little flask that they used to keep the balsam in. Remember we learned in the previous perek, that in the sixth perek actually, that the ladies used to wear sometimes, and they had a smell, they would wear a plaiton, they would wear a little flask with balsam in it, right? In order to give them a good odor. So a person would take, let's say, the niyar mahuk, he can't write on it, but he would use it to cover up the flask, maybe let's say tie it, in order that the balsam doesn't fall out. So if it's big enough to use as a, you know, a bottle, not a stopper, but a cover to the bottle, then it's to be considered hashuv, and everyone would be hayav. Or, what's the minimum amount of leather? Kedei lasot kamiya. See, the minimal size to write a amulet on it. We skip the parentheses. Klaf, the minimal size of klaf, which is parchment. Kedei lichtov alat parasha ketanash betefilin, shi Shema Yisrael. In order to write the smallest parasha in the tefilin, which is Shema Yisrael and parashat ve'ahavta. Dio, the minimal amount of ink. Kedei lichtov bet otiyot. Right, the amount of ink that to write two letters. Call the amount of, let's say, mascara, that would be like a type of makeup that they used to, you know, paint their eyes with. Kedei lichol ayin ehat. The amount to paint one eye. Obviously the Gemara is going to ask, what do you mean one eye? Normally a person puts on makeup, you put on for two eyes. So why is one eye the minimum? Debek, the amount to glue. Kedei liten berosh hashavshaf. The amount to put on top of a shafshaf, the Gemara will explain what a shafshaf is. Zefet v'gofrit. Zefet literally means tar. V'gofrit would be sulfur. Kedei la'asot nekev. In order to make a nekev. Now this is a machloket amongst the Rishonim, what exactly we're talking about over here. The way that Rashi seems to say is, in the olden days, they used to store mercury in a certain type of kli katan, a small vessel. Now, in order to seal the vessel, they would place tar on top of it. Now, once they would seal the vessel with tar, they needed to make a hole through it in order to pour the mercury out. Now, the Ran and the Me'iri both explained that after they made the hole, now they had to seal it. They didn't want to leave it open. So they would take a little tar or gofrit or sulfur and they would seal up the hole. So there was the shi'ur of zefet and gofrit. They're going to be hayab is the amount that's used to reseal the nekif on this mercury jug. So kedel la'asot would more mean like kedel taken. Sometimes the word la'asot can mean you're not using it to make the hole. The hole is air. La'asot meaning le'taken, to fix, nekev. Okay? Sha'ava. When it comes to wax, the minimum size of wax to be hayav, kedei liten al pi nekev katan, to place on a small hole. The Gemara will explain that we're talking about over here, wine barrels, placing, let's say, wax on. We'll wait for the Gemara to explain where, what exactly type of hole you are covering. Harasit. What is harasit? Rashi explains that's talking about crushed bricks. Kedel la'asot pikur shel tzorfe zahav, which means they used to make a pikur. We learned was, let's say, the guys that used to make gold, the goldsmiths. So they had a certain type of oven. And we learned earlier that they used to make a hole in the side of the oven in order to stick the bellows in order they could get the fire to become higher. So it seems that they used to place this harasit, these bricks that are crushed, in order to make the pikur, that little area where they inserted the bellows. That would be the shiur. Rabbi Yehuda omer kedei la'asot pitput. He says, no, they would use the crushed brick in order to make, let's say, a stand for the oven. So they would place, let's say, little pieces underneath, like a stand, so it doesn't rest on the ground. They would, lift it up, raise the oven of the kur, they would call it the kur oven, with these items. Subin literally means bran. Kedei liten al pi kur tzorfe zahav. Sometimes the goldsmith would not have coals in order to fuel his oven. So instead they would use subin, they would use bran. So the amount of bran that the goldsmith would throw over his fire. Seed, which would be lime, kedei lasud ketana shebebanot. Now you have to keep in mind, the lime in the olden days used to be used not only for building, but they also use it as a depilatory in order to remove hair from the ladies. So what's the shiur of lime that you'd be hayav to take out on Shabbat? Enough in order to, place it on a ketana, on a little child, in order to remove the hair from her body. Rabbi Yehuda omer, kedei la'asot kilkul, which means, according to the Yehuda, they used to use the lime sometimes in order to hold back the sideburns of the lady's hair. It was like a gel, let's say. Right? So they would place a little of it, so the hair would go back. He learns a little differently. The Nehemiah says, no, in order to keep the sideburns down, so they would thus place a little of the slime over there, and that was called undapi. But the Gemara will explain these things clearly. Comes the Gemara and begins, Hevel namel lechayev kedei la'asot telai lenapav lekabra. When it came to a rope, what do we say the minimal shirut of a rope is? A rope to make a handle on a box, on a basket, right? So the Gemara says, why'd you give me such a big shirut? Why don't you say that the rope should be chayev even to make a little hook in order to hang up the sifting utensils? She's be mechayev the guy even for less. So the Gemara says, kevan deharik bemana lo avid inche. It seems these items would cause ridges into the wooden vessel if you'd make it as a hook. So therefore, you would not use a rope as a hook for the item because it would ruin the vessel. It seems that the abrasion of the rope rubbing against the keli would not be beneficial. So therefore, they would only use it as a handle. Tanu Rabbanan, we have a braita. The braita says, hutsin, what is hutsin? Rashi says, this is made from the palm tree. What's the shiur of the, I guess we'll call them the palm branches, something like that. Kedei la'asot ozen lesal kefafit metzarit. The shiur would be in order to make an ozen, as is a handle again, in order to carry a basket, kefafit metzarit, that's made out of, as she said, sure dekel, that's made out of the branches of the palm tree. So it seems he used to use a hutsin, these items that are also from the palm tree, as a handle to this basket that was also made out of palms. Sieve was literally, I think they call it palm bark, okay. Palm basis, I think, better. Which is, this used to be around the palm tree there's like certain certain vine that grows around. That's what I call it, a sieve. Sieve comes from Lashon Saviv. I mean, it grows around it. So it says, אחרים אומרים כדי ליתן על פי משפך קטן לצנן את היין. Okay, they would use the sieve to place on a small funnel. משפך קטן is a small funnel לצנן את היין. They would use it as a sieve, which means they would place it on the funnel. Now when they were pouring wine through it, all the impurities and the sediment would rest on top of the sieve, and the wine would go through. So using it as a strainer, basically. That's the minimal shi'ud to be hayav. Revav would be grease. What's the minimum shi'ud of grease that a person would be hayav if he carries that on Shabbat? Kedeh lasuch ta'at aspagin ketana. The amount that you would use to place under a small wafer if you were, let's say, cooking it. So you have to put some grease there, right? You have to grease the pan. So the amount that you would grease in order to put a small wafer. Dekama shi'ura kesela. And what's the shi'ur in different terminology? Sela, the size of a coin. What do you mean? We learned that the shi'ur of grease is the size of a fig. Gemara says, idi v'idi. Had shi'ura, it's the same shi'ura. The size of a sela and the size of a grogeret is the same thing. Then as she over here writes, in Dibura Metchil Revav, he writes, shomen would be like the grease, or shemen, or oil. Now Tosafot is bothered with that, because we learned already, we gave a minimum shi'ur for oil in our Mishnah. So look at the Tosafot, the Tosafot says, second Tosfot on the Daf. Actually, first Tosfot, Revav. Perush bekontra shomen o shemen. Val korhach en o shemen. Can't be shemen. The shemen natnu bo hachamim shiur acher b'manitin. So therefore Tosfot negates that opinion of Rashi that mentions the word shemen. He said it has to be talking about grease. Now Tosfot just has a different question in the second Tosfot. Grease obviously is a meat item. In the subject of meat and dairy, grease is usually made out of something that was meaty. The only question is, the Gemara discusses in Pesachim that you're really not allowed to make bread that is meat. Bread has to be pav, because we don't want the person to come to eat meat bread with dairy, or for that matter, dairy bread with meat. So therefore, Tosfot has a whole question of, you know, are you putting grease underneath a wafer to start off with? Bottom line, you're going to make now meat bread or meat cake. So Tosfot answers what the Gemara answers over there. Either you make it in a small measure where you're able to eat it in one meal, or you make a design on the cake, so therefore it's noticeable that this is not, you know, the normal style, so everybody will know that there is an issue over here. Either it's meat or it is dairy. Comes Gemara and says, Mochin little means cotton. Kedeh la'asot kadur ketana. In order to make a small ball. Ve'kama shi'uro, it's a small ball of cotton. Ke'egos, the size of a walnut. Niyar, when it comes to paper, kedeh lichtov alav keshen moksim, right? The shi'ur is to write the two letters that the tax collectors would write as a receipt. Tana. We have a braita. Kama kesher moksin. How many letters? How big is the kesher moksin? Is this receipt of the tax collectors? Shete otiyot. It's two letters. Urminu, we have a contradiction. Hamotzi niyar halak. If a person on Shabbat takes out a clear sheet of paper. Im yesh bo kedeh lichtov shte otiyot hayav. Right? If it has the enough space on the paper to write two letters, hayavim lav patur, and if not, he's patur. Now, it sounds like any two letters. We just said, what, for a shtar moksim, it has to be two big letters. Now, it's mashma, then no, if you have a paper that's big enough to write even two letters, not necessarily big letters, you're going to be hayav. So make up your mind, it would have to be the size of two big letters, or two regular size. Amar Rav Sheshat. So Rav Sheshat comes along and says, "My shte otiyot." What does it mean when it said in that braita, niyad that has on it the amount where you can write two otiyot? Shte otiyot shel kesher moksin. It meant two letters the size of Keshamoksi means two big letters. Therefore, the Braita is not contradictory to our Mishnah. Both agree the Shi'ud is two big letters. The Braita said two letters. Yeah, what's letters? It's a different type of letters. The big font. I mean, the ones that they would write with the moksim, the tax collectors. Rava Amar, Shte Otiyot Didan Ubet Achiza. Which means when it said in the Braita that you have the paper with two letters, it meant two regular letters. But take into consideration the Bet Achiza. Bet Achiza literally means how you hold it, which means when you present the document, you have to hold it, right? So Bet Achiza, we would call it a margin, for example, right? So therefore you have two letters on the paper plus the margin, which is equivalent, Da'ayinu Kesher Moksin, which is equivalent to the size of Kesher Moksin, which is the Kesher Moksin that she explains. They didn't need to hold it on the margin. They would write two big letters. It seems they would place it in their palm, and they would present it, you know, just holding it in their palm. However, when it comes to a regular niyar, what's the shirut of a niyar? Two small letters plus, take into consideration there's a margin there as well. So if you factor in the margin with the two small letters, that'll come to the same shirut as a Kesher Shel Moksim. So I mean, basically, they're agreeing on the side. Just how do you get there, right? So the Kesher Shel learns the Braita. That's what the Braita is talking about, two big letters. Whereas Rava learns it, no, two small letters with the Bet Achiza. We have a question from a third Braita. Hamotzi Niyad Machuk. If a guy takes out on Shabbat Niyad Machuk, that's a Niyad that was erased. Right, it was had words on it, and you erased it. Vishtar parua. For that matter, you take out a shtar that was paid already. A shtar that was paid already really has no function. The shtar was paid. In yesh bilo ben shelo. If let's say on the white part of the document, it seems the document still has some, you know, area that wasn't erased on it, or you know, the shtar has area, let's say, that still is white. So if in the lo ben shelo, from the white part of these documents, there's enough space kedei lichtov shtei otiyot to write two letters, o bekulo kedei lichrok al pi shluchit ketana shel plaiton, or let's say the entire document is large enough in order to wrap around the balsam flask, hayav. Then he's going to be hayav ve'im lav patur. But if not, he's going to be patur. So what does this bright have to do with us? Give us bishtama de Rav Sheshat. According to Rav Sheshat, that said what? That said that the first bright that we quoted was talking about when the guy wrote two otiyot. It's talking about he wrote two large otiyot. The amar maishte otiyot shte otiyot shel kesher moksin shapir. Which means you have to write two letters of Shtar Moksin and Shapir, which is this Braita over here. I'll say the same thing. When it's saying that you have the document over there and you have the Lobin over there, if you can write in the area of the Lobin, the white area that's on the document, if you could fit two big letters of the Shtar Moksin, so it's fine, which is the Braita all consistent. Shtei Otiyot means Shtei Otiyot Gedolot. However, Ela L'Rabah, but according to Rabah Damar, Shtei Otiyot Didan. That's referring to what? Two letters means two regular letters, ubet achiza, plus factoring in its margin, da'inu kesher moksin, and that is the equivalent size of kesher moksin, hacha bet achiza lo tzarich. Over here in this case, you're not going to need a bet achiza, a margin, in order to hold the document. Why? Because you could hold it from the erased area. When you're in this place over here, you've got to remember, part of the document is not usable anymore. So therefore, it's a little funny, according to Rava, that, you know, once you're learning, you want to keep the Braita consistent. My Braita number two, or Braita number one, I should say, that we quoted, he learned what? It's a regular piece of paper. You wrote two small letters, plus the Bet Achiza. So here you want to explain it the same way. You're obviously talking about two letters with a Bet Achiza. Well, you really wouldn't need a Bet Achiza over here. Why? Because you don't have to hold it by a margin. You can just hold it in the area that was erased already. So therefore, the Braita over here sounds a little better according to Shitat Rav Sheshat, where it's very simple. If on the clear area of the paper, you have enough to write two big letters, so then you're going to be Hayav. However, according to Rava, it's smashed by two small letters like you learned above, plus a Bet Achiza. Well, what do you need a Bet Achiza here for? The Bet Ha'Aizah could be the actual erased area. So the Gemara says Kasha. Yeah, that's a Kasha on Rava. The Gemara leaves that question on Rava. Tanu Rabanan, we have a Braita. Hamotzi Kesher Mochsi. And now we discuss guy carrying on Shabbat this receipt that he gets from the tax collector. Says Ad Shelo Hid'ahu Lemoches. Until you showed it to the tax collector, Hayav. Then you're going to be Hayav, meaning it's substantial, and therefore it's considered carrying on Shabbat, because you're carrying something that is Hashuf. Let's just review the rules. You're only going to be Hayav Chatan on Shabbat if you're carrying something that has some importance to it, some need. But if you're just carrying something that's not substantial, of course you cannot carry it on Shabbat, but you're not going to be Hayav Chatat. Right, that's the whole theme of this whole perek and the last perekim that we learned, that has to be davar hashuv, has to be certain importance to it. So until you showed it to the tax collector, obviously it's hashuv. The guy wants to prove that he paid the taxes. You don't want to lose this item, so therefore you can be hayav. However, mishir au lemoches, once already you showed the tax collector that you paid, so now technically you don't need this item anymore. So now patur. So that loses its value technically. And therefore if you carried it subsequently on Shabbat, you'll be patur from hatat. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af mishir au lemoches chayav. Now look, even if you showed it to the tax collector, it's still important. Why? Mipenesh tzarichlo. Because he still needs it. So the Gemara asks, my binayu, what's the practical difference, argument between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim? Which means, obviously they're arguing in a specific case over here, where Rabbi Yehuda is saying, no, you still need the item. Whereas Chachamim are going to tell you, you don't need the item. What's the malokin? My binayu. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbeye Ika binayu rahite muhsa. You have a difference over here, rahite. Rahite means the runners of the tax collectors. What are these runners of the tax collectors? Let's read Rashi together. The runners of the tax collectors. You see Rashi? He gives you a la'az word first. They were in charge of running after the people that were passing. Their job was that they would try to catch the guys that evaded their taxes. So their job is to go try to find out who's not paying their taxes. So now if you get caught by one of these guys, what do you have to end up doing? You have to walk all the way back to the tax collector and you have to start showing, I was the guy, I paid it and all that. So it's a pain in the neck. Which means, but if you have your receipt on you, so if these guys ever catch up with you, you just say, hey, look, I paid it. So it saves you the trip. Oh, so why doesn't Tanakama say that it's important to present the document to these guys? So that she continues and says, Tanakama, but according to Tanakama, lo matznale lachi dikira item batre hadar legabe mochis. He says, for some reason, it's easier, not easier, but the guy doesn't mind. If he gets caught by these guys, maybe it was a rare event. So the guy is not banking on getting caught by these guys that run after the tax collector. If he gets caught, okay, so he's going to go now and he'll defend himself. But he's not going to hold the document. It seems is a pressure for a guy that has to keep the document in his possession. So Tanakama says that this item now is not considered hashuv if he presented it once to the original guy, and therefore if he carries it subsequently, even though he can present it to this guy, it's not hashufim because he doesn't mind going back. So that's the machloket between Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda. Rava Amar, Rava gives a different answer. Moches gadol u'moches katan ika benayu. The difference between them is the big tax collector and the small tax collector. What does that mean? Let's read Rashi together on this one. Moches katan. Pe'amim, sheyesh moches gadol. Sometimes there's the major tax collector. He's not going to stand by the bridge all day long like the guys that collect the taxes by the bridges. This guy's not going to stand there all day. So what does he do? So he appoints a minor collector to stand by the bridges. This guy wants to show that he paid his taxes. Who's he have to prove it to? To the main tax collector. Which means, even though he showed it to the small guy over the bridge, she's like this. This guy, he's got his receipt already. Now he wants to cross the bridge. So you have the small tax collector over there. The guy's not going to let him cross unless he sees a receipt. So therefore the Biyuda says this receipt, even after he paid, is important. Whereas Tanakama says once you pay, the Moches Gadol gives him a password. When he tells him, just tell the guy, you know, a certain code, and he'll let you over the bridge. So therefore, what do I got to hold this document for? This document is worthless for me now. I could just give him the password. Rashi says that. Ultanakama en sadichlo. Shagadol mosilo siman devarim. Ve'omer lekatan ve'over. So the Gadol will give, like I said, a verbal password, and he goes through. That's the Malok. That's the way Rabbah learns it. Then we have another answer. Which means we're talking about a case where there's even only one tax collector, and the tax collector gave him the receipt. So if that's it, there's only one tax collector and he gave him the receipt, so what purpose would you have to hold on to this document? You want to show it to another tax collector, meaning somewhere else. Why? When a guy wants to prove his veracity and honesty, let's say he gets caught up somewhere else, where then they start to have claims against him on a different crime, let's say, on a different item. So he wants to show that he's an honest guy. So how does a guy prove that he's honest? That he pays his taxes. So how does he prove that he pays his taxes? He takes out the guy, look at this here, would I do this? I'm a guy who pays taxes. So he would say, Hazeh Gabra, look at the guy, Demoches Ana, I'm a taxpayer. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, you'll hold on to the document in order to use it later on in life, in another case that comes against you, you use it to, you know, prove your innocence. Whereas Tanna Kamma says, once you paid your taxes, we don't suspect that the guy's going to hold on to the document. Now the Gemara just brought us different opinions by the document of the tax collector. The Gemara is going to bring us a related subject regarding a shtar. Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, we have a braita. Amotzi shetar chov. Guy has a shtar chov, that's a document that's written in order to collect a loan. That's right. The malve is the one that lends the money. The love is the one that borrows the money. Now, what would happen is, you have to write up a shtar, a document, right? That says, you know, this money is owed to the malve. Now, who holds usually the document? The malve. Of course, because the malve now wants to get his money back. So therefore, what does he do? He presents the shtar. Yeah, I got a shtar over here. It's got witnesses on it, of course. He says, pay me. So now, let's say the Gemara says, Hamotzi shtar chov. A guy goes out on Shabbat. We'll see who it is, whether it's the malve or the love. We'll see that in a moment. And he carries the shtar chov, this document that demands payment. Ad shelo pera'o. Until the loan was paid, hayav. We can make sense of that because it's a viable document. Guy needs it to get his money. So therefore it's important. But once already he was paid already, so therefore the document has, let's say, no value. So therefore it's not considered hashuv and therefore patur. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, af mishep paro chayav. Rabbi Yehuda says, even after the loan was paid, the document is still hashuv, and therefore the guy who carries it out is chayav. Why? Mipenesh tzarichlo, because he still needs it. So now we want to understand the details of this case. Who still needs it? What's the scenario? So the Gemara asks, "My benayu, what's the case between them?" So Amar of Yosef. So Rav Yosef gives one understanding. Asur leshot shtar parua ika benayu. Jeez, the whole question is over here. Is a person allowed to keep in his possession a shtar that already was paid? Which means now the malve presented the shtar, right? The malve sees the shtar, he says, I agree, I have to pay. He pays him. Now, is the malve allowed to hold on to this shtar? So that's the mahloket. So, Rabbanan savre asur lishhot shtar parua. The rabbis say, it's forbidden for the malveh to keep a shtar parua.
Why is it forbidden? Because he can represent, he can present it a second time. And therefore the Pasuk says, Al tishkon ba'aholecha avla, that you're not allowed to keep in your house something that could be bad. This item is a dangerous thing now, because if the Malveh presents it again, the Loveh is in trouble. So therefore, rabbis come along and say, after it's paid, this has no purpose over here, which means the Malveh's got to get rid of it. You can't even use it to cover a kind of platon, a platon shell, the flask, because you got to get rid of it. So therefore, once it's paid, Tana Kama is going to say, if the Malveh carried it on Shabbat, it's really worthless. However, if it be Yudas Sabar, mutar lishot shtar parua. Rabbi Yudas says, no, you're allowed to keep a shtar parua in your house, and therefore what? You could use it. What could you use it for? To cover a flask. And therefore, it has a
value.
So it has a value. Rabbi Yudas is going to say, you're going to be Hayav, you carry it on Shabbat. Let's read Rashi. First white line in Rashi. אסור לשתות שטר פרוע משום שנאמר פסוק הנאיות את תשכון בהולך העבלה. You shouldn't keep in your house things that are not good, bad things. הלכך מלווה לא משהל לעשות הפי סליחותו. Right, the Malveh is not going to keep it in his house to use it as a cover for his סלוחית משום איסור. Now ולווה נמה לא משהל, which means maybe he'll say, well, let the Malveh just give it back to the Loveh. It's his document technically, now he paid, and give him his pebeba. Well, so the Loveh as well, it's valueless to him too. You know why? He don't want this document, because if he loses the document, the Malveh will find it and will present it again for payment. So therefore it's no value for both sides. The Malveh is not allowed to keep it. The Loveh won't keep it. And then what Tana Kama says, whoever takes it out is going to be patur. Okay, that's the answer of who? That's the answer of Rav Yosef. Now the Gemara gives a different understanding. Rabbi Yehuda savar mutar lishot shtar parua. Rabbi, I'm fine. Abaye amar, Abaye says, second answer of the Gemara. Dekol le'alme asur lishot shtar parua. You know, everybody holds, you can't keep a shtar parua in your house. That's not the subject over here. Everybody says you can't keep, you gotta get rid of it. But still, we have a mahlokin. How? Ve'aka b'mode b'shtar sheketabo shetzarich lekayemo kamepalger. It's the mahlokin of mode b'shtar sheketabo. Let's discuss that subject. You have a shtar over here that obviously the Malveh claims that wants to get paid. Now, normally, when it comes to the guy wanting to get paid, you have to be mekayem shtar. Mekayem shtar, you have to validate it. Which means, who said it's a emet shtar? Who said the shtar is, maybe it's a forge? Maybe it's, why does Levit have to just pay because this guy produced a shtar? So you make what's called kiyum. Kiyum is either you bring the witnesses that signed on the shtar, or you bring people that recognize the signature of these witnesses, and then the shtar becomes a valid, and that's it, and then Malveh's got to pay. And the Loveh's got to pay. But let's say like this. We have a case of Modeh Bishtar. Sheketavo. The Loveh comes along and says, 100%, that's a legitimate document, that's legal, the witnesses are there, and he's not arguing on the validity of the shtar. He's Modeh Bishtar Sheketavo. So now we have a great mahlokin amongst the Tanaim. One Tana holds that once he says that, and then he comes along and says, but I paid. I mean, he's saying a second statement as well. I agree the shtar is a shtar, but I paid. So then you believe the Loveh. Because the same mouth that gave validity to the shtar is the same mouth that's saying he paid. You believe them on this, you believe them on that. And therefore, it's over. This shtar now is worthless. Basically, it's paid up, it's finished, you trust them, and it's finished. However, according to another Tana, they say no. Modeh b'shtar sheketavo. A guy comes along and says, it's valid, there's validity to the shtar. For that, we believe him on. Once he comes along and says, Yeah, and I paid it. No, no. That, once you admit that the shtar is a shtar, so what those words do is, now I don't have to validate the shtar. Which means, instead of having to validate it with witnesses, and I can accept the Lovez, testimony, he says it's a valid shtar. The fact that he says, I paid, we don't believe him on that. So there's a whole mahalach, modeh b'shtar b'ketavo, shetzarich lekayemo kamepligin, which means, when a guy's modeh that he wrote a shtar, and the Lovez agrees to the shtar, do you have to mekayem it after? What does he mekayem it after? Does it still need validating? Now, we'll see, why should it still need validating? Gemara will explain. Tana Kama Sabar. Tana Kama says, Modeh b'shtar sheketavo, when a guy admits to a shtar that he wrote it, tzarich lekayemo, you have to still validate. Can we read Rashi together? Rashi says, Modeh b'shtar sheketavo, three lines from the bottom. Halove modeh sheketavo. Right? He says, I wrote it. Tzarich lekayemo. Now, how do you validate it? Velomar lo parati. Which means, if he says, I didn't pay, that now it's 100% legal shtar. He admits that he wrote it. He admits that he didn't pay. That's considered kiyum. That's a great validation, right? Now all the malvez got to do is, all right, pay me. V'chol kamad delo amar hache. Now watch this. So long as he didn't say that I didn't pay, lav shtarahu, it's not considered a shtar. Which is, just by the guy saying I wrote it doesn't make it a shtar according to one Tana. You gotta get witnesses from somewhere else to prove the legality. The guy coming along to say I wrote it, not enough. Until he says I wrote it and I didn't pay. Yeah, you wrote it, you didn't pay. That's perfect. That's everything. But you just said I wrote it, you need kiyum from somewhere else. Now, why? Because his words over there, he's saying, he's not admitting that he owes the money yet. So until he admits that he didn't pay the money, his words cannot validate a shtar. Ilav mashkach sadeh lakid hachatima. Why? As she says, deman kamashveh l'shtara, who's making the shtar a shtar over here? The loveh, tamar ketaftif. He's saying, I wrote it. Loveh nameh haka amar parati. Right? In the case where the loveh says, I paid it, so what's the logic we say over there? Hapesh asar wa pesh etir. Right? The same mouth that was osed, meaning said that I owe the money, by validating the shtar, is saying, I paid it. Hilkach mishiparo, meaning when he paid, meaning kilomar, mishiyomar parati, from the time that he admits that he paid, patur, delot sarichle, which is now already, you don't need this shtar anymore. V'Rabbi Yehuda savar, en sarich lekayemo. Now let's get it back to our machloket by us. Rabbi Yehuda says, when a guy's modeh b'shtar sheketavo, he says en sarich lekayemo, you do not have to validate it. Tekevan de modeh sheketavo, since he admits that he paid it, velovebo hareu keilu kiyemu hotamav vegovebo kozman shemotzio, which means according to Rabbi Yehuda, this shtar over here is a legal document. Once he comes along and says, I wrote it, and but he doesn't admit that he paid it yet. Right? If he doesn't admit that he paid it yet, so that everybody agrees. If he didn't pay it yet, so there's no argument. It's a legal document. I wrote it and I didn't pay it yet. No machloket. Everybody would agree the shtar has validity and the mavasta could use it. We're discussing where he says, I wrote the shtar and I paid it. So if you say I wrote and I paid it, one rabbi will say, you believe him. If you believe him, so then already the shtar is useless. However, if you say that modeh b'shtar, when a guy admits the shtar, he says parati, you don't believe him on the parati side, you don't believe him that he paid it, which means, meaning, you still need, let's say, to mikayem the shtar, you still need, let's say, to validate it somewhere else, so therefore, the shtar, let's say, still has some viability. Let's read that inside. Let's read that inside again. We're going to start from three lines at the bottom of the Gemara, and the Amud Sheni. V'hacha b'modeh b'shtar shekitavosh shesarich l'kayemo kamepalgeh. The argument over here is where the lover is more there in the shtar that he wrote it. Do you still have to mekayem it? Do you still need it to make a kiyum on the shtar? Kame pligetana kama sabar modeh b'shtar sheketavot sarich lekayemo. Now, in this case, I must point out, it is impossible to make kiyum on the shtar. Tosfos speaks that out, that we're talking about where the witnesses are, they can't find the witnesses, or you know, it's forgiven in this case that kiyum is not going to happen. Now, since according to Tanna Kamma, if a guy's modeh b'shtar, however, he says that what? Modeh b'shtar, it comes as I paid, so you still have to make kiyum, and since you can't make kiyum over here, so therefore the shtar has no legality to it, so therefore the shtar is worthless, therefore if you carry such a shtar on Shabbat, you're going to be patur. Rabbi Yehuda says, modeh b'shtar, shkedva etzadich l'kayimo. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, once the guy admits he wrote it, it's kiyum. I don't care if he said he paid it. Then I'll listen to that. Bottom line, he says it's a good start. It's mikuyam. Mikuyam, the mavi can use it too. Get paid. Therefore,
hayav.
Umay ad shelo perao mishparo. The only question is, if this is the scenario, we run into a problem with the lashon of the braita. The braita said, if the start wasn't paid yet, then already everybody says hayav. If it was paid yet, then it's a machloket. So what does that lashon mean over here? Paid, not paid. So Gemara says, ad shiomar lo ve parati ve lo parati. What it means is, it's not talking about if it was actually paid or not. The subject is what the lover is claiming. It means if the lover claims I didn't pay, then everybody agrees it's a valid shtar. If the lover says I paid, then you have a machloket. Tana Kama will say that what? You need to mekayem it. And since you cannot mekayem it, so therefore it's worthless. Rabbi Yehuda says no. Once the guy says I wrote the shtar, so therefore the kiyum is already made. And once the kiyum is made, the shtar is legal, and therefore going to be hayav. Comes the Gemara and continues. Rava Amar. Different way of understanding. Everybody holds what? Even if the guy admits that he wrote the shtar, that what? You still need to make kiyum. You still need to validate. That's not the argument over here. The machloket over here is, does the malveh have to write a receipt after he gets paid? Tana kavasvar kodvim shomar. Tanna Kamma says he has to write a receipt. The Rabbi Yehuda Sabar and Kodim Shobar. Now let's discuss the receipt issue in relation to this machloket. Can we read Rashi together? Let's read Rashi. We're going to start Achab the Kodim Shobar, but it's actually in the middle of the Rashi. You see where it says Vehegima Vahachi Garsinan? It's almost like 15 lines down in that Rashi. Vehegima. The first word on the line is Omer.
Yeah.
Vehegi v'achi garsinan Tanna Kamma. Okay, Tanna Kamma savar kodvim shobar. Tanna Kamma says you have to write a receipt. V'achi kamar mishparo love. Let's say the love paid the debt, right? Ve'otzio malve b'shabbat, and now the malve took out the shtar and carried it on Shabbat. Patur. Why? She'enu tzarich lo. Which means nobody needs this document over here. Not the, the lover doesn't need it. Why doesn't the lover need it? Because bottom line, he has a shomar. He has a receipt. So therefore, you know, it's considered, let's say, it's obviously that it was, he can prove that it was paid. Now, the i'amad kevan d'ra'ud l'tzula pishlichuto, hu d'be'ehadur l'lover. What do you mean? Let's say it has validity because he should give it back to the lover and he could use it to cover on his tzluchit. So that she says, "Lo mashele shema yaboli de malveh v'yazov yit be'ainu." Right? He's worried that he might lose it and it might get back into the hands of the malveh and he might come to, let's say, take payment again. Now, wait. V'ina me lo medale malveh. He's going to say that now. And even if, let's say, v'ina me also, lo medale malveh, if the malveh doesn't give it back, lo ichpat lelove. Why? The malveh katav lelove shomar lelove. Because bottom line, he has everything. So the lelove doesn't care about this document. No. Right? Whether from his standpoint, you don't want to get involved with keeping it because he might lose it, or for the fact that he doesn't want it, he doesn't care because he's got his shovar. So once he has his shovar, so this really, this document over here has no hashivut. But so Rabbi Yehuda is going to, so Tanakama is going to say,
it's patur.
The Rabbi Yehuda savar en kodim shovar. The Rabbi Yehuda says, you don't write. Hilkak sarichu amalveh deba'e hadure. Which means he's going to have to give this document back to the loveh. V'i lo ma'adeh lechozer v'tobo'o lo ma'sheparo. Telo sagi lebeshoma desrik leshomro min akbarim. Which means this guy over here now, in this case, he lent the money. Right? Now let's say it seems that he paid him back, but he still's got the shtar. It's possible that he lost the shtar in the interim, but the Beit Din came along and said, no, he's got to pay. So now the novice, all right, but, you know, I want that document, right? I want that document back. Now, Rabbi Yehuda holds that you do not write a shovar. Why? Because the lovei can come along and say, I'm not walking around now with a shovar. You're making me now obligated. I got to walk around with a shovar my whole life now. And if I lose the shovar, I'm in trouble. Maybe the shovar's going to get eaten by the mice. Mm-hmm. So since the lovei could come along and say, I'm not interested in the shovar. I want the document. I want the shtar back. I'll take it. I'll rip it up. I'll do what I want. You can't obligate a lovei to walk around with something for the rest of his life. So therefore, in a case where you're not writing a shovar, this document over here is important. What is important? Because if he can't produce it, so then the lovei is going to come along and say, I'm not paying you. You know, I want my money back. You know, no deal. So therefore, he's got to have this document over here in order to give it back. It's still hashuv to the malveh in order to have this document, in order to give it back to the lovei. So therefore, if he carried on Shabbat, one is going to be Hayab. So therefore, that would be the Mahlokah. Do you write a Shovar? Or if you write a Shovar, so now once you give it to the Loveh, so that's it, he's got his paper over there. So to him, it's not Hashuv at all. I don't need the document. First of all, I'm not keeping the document, lest I lose it. And second of all, even if I don't get the document, look, but the Shovar proves that I paid it. So therefore, it has no Hashivut. However, according to the Biyuda, where he's not getting a Shovar, so this document over here has a very, very big importance. Why? Because if he doesn't get it, so therefore, he's not carrying a Shovar his whole life. That's not an option. So therefore, the document now needs to be produced in order to settle the claim. So that's what she says towards the end. Hilkach sarichu amalveh. The malveh needs this document. Why? In order to give it back, in order that he gets his money. So if the malveh would carry such an item on Shabbat, according to the Biyuda, it would be Hayab. Last opinion, and we conclude with this. Rav Asher amar nesarich la'ot lebal chov sheni. Damar lehazeh gamra de parana. Rav Asher says, no, you know why he keeps the document? Very simple. He keeps the document in his hand in order to show that he's an honorable man, that he pays his debts. And therefore, the next guy that comes along and he wants to borrow money, so come on, how do I know you're going to pay? So I say, what are you talking about? Why don't you look at this document over here? I'm an honorable guy. I pay my debt. So therefore, the lover will always want even a shtar that is parua, because he could use it to prove his veracity. So therefore, according to the Biyuda, you're going to be hayab. Whereas according to Tanakama, you're going to be patur. So let's just review quickly the answers that we gave of Motsi Shtar Chov. The first answer we gave according to the Gemara was the opinion of Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef explained the Mahlokit, Asur Lishot Shtar Chov Bebeto. Which means Tanakama will say, what, since you can't keep it in your house, why? Because it says in the Pasuk, Atashkon Ma'olecha Avla. So therefore, the malveh can't keep it in his house, so therefore to him it's worthless. Right? Nor can he put it on his snuchit, because he's got to throw it out. He's not giving it back to the loveh, because the loveh don't want it either. Because if the loveh loses it, he's going to get paid again. So therefore, according to Tanakama, it's worthless, therefore you're patur. The Biyuda says, no, then Malveh is allowed to keep it in his house. So if he's allowed to keep it in his house, he has for usage, what? Latsura pishtechoto. So therefore it's considered chashuv. Therefore it's going to be hayab. That's the machloket that the command of Yehuda. Second understanding was from Abaye. Abaye came along and explained the machloket is more debish vashtiketavot. You have to make kiyum or not. Meaning, according to Tanakama, if a guy is modeh b'shtarim loveh, he admits that what the shtar is legitimate, right? However, what does he say? He says parati. He says I paid it. So the Tanna Kamma says you have to still make kiyum, which means his saying that he wrote it's not enough. You still got to make, because he's saying parati. You still got to now go. So therefore, according to him, he's saying I wrote it. I paid it. So therefore, you want to get the money from me over here, you still have to make kiyum. Tosfot explains in this case, you cannot make kiyum. Therefore, the shtar is
worthless.
How's the guy going to get his payment over here? You still got to make kiyum on the shtar. This guy's saying parati, so therefore it's worthless. According to Rabbi Yehuda, he says, no, modeh b'shtar sheketavo, even though he says parati, we don't care what he says parati. Bottom line, that's as if he made kiyum. The shtar is legitimate, therefore Tabiu, that's as Hashuban, the Malveh carries the shtar on Shabbat, is going to be hayab. Third explanation was said by Rava. Rava comes along and says the machloket is on the Shovar. Do you write a receipt or not? Tanakama says you write a receipt. Once you write a receipt, and you give it to the Loveh, so therefore this document over here is worthless over there, because bottom line, the Loveh, he doesn't need the document, he's got the Shabbat over here. So therefore, if it carries on Shabbat according to Tanakama, Patur. Whereas the Behuda says you don't write a Shabbat. You don't write a Shabbat, therefore the Loveh wants this document over here. Because, to the Malveh I should say, it's Hashuv that he has this document, because otherwise he's not going to get paid. Because since he's not giving him a Shovar, why is he not giving him a Shovar? Because the guy can say, I'm not carrying a Shovar for the rest of my life, so therefore this is a Hashuv document to the Malveh, in order that he'll get paid, he's got to find it. And if he found it and walked out with the Shtar on Shabbat, he's going to be Hayav. Last opinion says, now the Mahalokan over here is very simple. Does the guy keep a paid document in order to prove his honesty somewhere else? If Tanakama says no, after it's paid, the Loveh throws it out. Where according to Tanakam, the Biudano, the Loveh will keep the document in order to show, look, I'm an honest guy. Amen. Amen.